Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 9:52 p.m. and that is Saudi Arabia time. And today is January 11th. I thought we'd kick off with the S&P 500 equal weighted index relative to the S&P 500 because there's been an awful lot of talk in the markets about narrowing breadth, and obviously narrowing breadth is something that we do need to pay attention to because we're relying on an increasingly small number of companies to generate positive returns for the stock market. And if they roll over, well, then the market is then acutely susceptible to a deep pullback. But we also need to pay attention to the wider picture, because we had a very broad-based rebound from 2000 through to 2007, and we had a big positive rebound as well from 2009 through till about 2011. But since really 2017, and I guess more accurately 2015, it's been a narrowing of breadth evident in this ratio. And it accelerated in 2020, where an extremely large number of companies went down faster than the large cap companies did. But in the second half of 2020, we had a broad-based rally. Everything rebounded. And over the course of the last 6 or 7 months, then there's been something of a correction. So the average stock hasn't been doing as well as the leaders in the S&P 500. But there's also the potential that what we've just seen is a higher reaction low. And if that's the case, well, then perhaps we should start thinking about broadening breadth as being a greater potential outcome than continued narrowing of breadth. And that would support the recovery hypothesis. But of course, that's depending on growth and interest rates being benign. So we're going to continue to come back to look at interest rates, because right now the 5-year yield isn't really doing anything. So we've had a really substantial advance over the course of the last 2 weeks, and the price, or I guess the yield, is now pausing in the region of 1.5%, and I would suspect that we have at least some potential for a contraction in yields just to unwind the short-term overextension. And that being the case, then we're continuing to see the rebound taking place in the NASDAQ 100. So it rebounded off the lows yesterday and followed through on the upside in here today. And stocks like Amazon, which were looking really ropey last week, have now posted failed downside breaks. So Amazon is still below the 200-day moving average, but it's certainly a failed downside break below the 3200 level. And that area has offered support on numerous occasions since May of last year. So there is the potential that if we can see additional follow-through on the upside here, that this is at least a short-term, potentially medium-term low for Amazon. Now, of course, there's a lot to play for here, because yields could still push back upwards, and I suspect that they will. I think that this is only a pause. So what I think instead of a clear change in the trend of the relative performance, we have to at least pay some due consideration to the fact that both the equal weighted index and the S&P 500 have been in really quite consistent uptrends. And the relative performance might have changed, but the absolute performance for both indices is still positive. So when I think it's too easy to get caught up with the performance of some of these ratios, we do need to pay attention to what's happening in terms of the absolute performance. And so far, at least, we're seeing an increasing number of companies bouncing from potential areas of support, which is positive. We're seeing breadth improve, which is positive. And at least bond yields have stopped aggressively advancing, and that's also positive. The dollar index is weaker, and it's pulled back now towards the lower side of its range in here today. So The euro is testing the upper side of its range, and it's really very oversold. So I think it's quite likely that we're going to see at least an unwind of the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Now, of course, if the dollar were to break lower, that would be positive for gold. And gold prices continue to steady here around the $1,800 level. So up $18 in here today, and that's quite positive. And it's been an extremely volatile, frustrating year. And I've written today about a subscriber who's canceling their subscription. They're frustrated with the commentary that they're receiving, the level of analysis that I'm providing, and they're frustrated with waiting it out in terms of gold. And they're frustrated too with the various rationales that are often competing and sometimes contradictory with regard to gold. Because a lot of people have had a difficult time figuring out why on earth the price of precious metals hasn't done anything for a year when we've had this extraordinary move in stock markets, an extraordinary move in cryptocurrencies and NFTs, and all of this seems to be rather silly. And the value of JPEGs accelerating to millions is just risible when we look at the value of hard assets like gold and silver. In fact, I did a little comparison, just a back of the copybook comparison in here today, and there are 12 cryptocurrencies that now have a greater market cap than the notional value of all the futures traded in silver. And the cryptocurrency that has the closest market cap to silver is Dogecoin, which is really quite a profound statement. Because Dogecoin is the one that was started off as a joke, and it's now worth about 16 billion. But that's also the funny thing, that silver is a very small market. Now, it's a metal that's found in every jewelry store in the world, and it's in increasing demand as an industrial resource, and yet the price has been going sideways for a year, and it's at the lower side of the range right now and testing the upper side of the base formation. Now, these kinds of almost incomprehensible misallocations of capital, they don't last indefinitely, but they do last long enough to frustrate everyone who can identify them. And usually, by the time people have exited the market, well, it's after that you'd then see the big rally occur. But this continues to look like a first step above the base. And I can't believe that Dogecoin is going to be worth more than all the silver traded on the CME for any kind of lengthy period of time. But that is the situation that we're in right now, which really is laughable. Now, we can also pay attention to what's happening with the oil price, because it was up a dollar in here today. And it's also reacting to a somewhat weaker dollar overall. Because Jay Powell was out talking today, and what he had to say was that perhaps the Federal Reserve isn't going to begin their balance sheet runoff in March. Maybe they'll wait until later in the year. And this is only after a 5% pullback on the S&P 500. They're already just ever so slightly beginning to change tack. And that's put downward pressure on the dollar. Now, can we simply consider that the market has priced in the potential that the Federal Reserve will raise rates 4 times this year? And the Fed is already walking back some of their more hawkish statements after a 5% pullback. You can imagine how quickly they would about face if they were presented with a 20% pullback. And the last thing the Federal Reserve wants is lower asset prices. And certainly they're becoming a little alarmed about inflation. They feel like they need to act, but they're a lot more afraid of deflation. And the reality is that, and it's been, I think, quite clear that there's just no way that they can raise interest rates in nearly as an aggressive manner as people were thinking. And there's the real potential that the USA is going to have great difficulty in raising interest rates, because the yield curve spread has already peaked at a substantially lower level. And in order to get to an inverted yield curve, well, the long end of the, or the, excuse me, the short end of the curve would nearly, wouldn't have to rise by more than 4 quarter point hikes, because the yield curve spreads only at 85 basis points. So it would suggest that the peak in interest rates on this occasion is going to be way lower than it has been in previous cycles. And to get to 4 interest rate hikes might take 3 or 4 years, not a mind 1 year, in order for the market to be able to tolerate that quantity of tightness. Because the reality is that the market now is completely addicted to monetary and fiscal stimulus. And there's also the potential that the market is pricing in that China is going to have to engage in additional stimulus, because this Omicron variant isn't just going to die down. And there is the real potential that it is going to rip through communities. And so far, the renminbi is completely stayed. So they are actively pegging the currency to the dollar. And then we can think about the Japanese yen, because Japan has been most active in devaluing its currency recently. And despite the fact that the dollar was quite weak in here today, the yen was even weaker. And this doesn't look like anything other than a small consolidation. So Japan is certainly eager to devalue their currency. Japan's also talking about implementing a carbon trading program. And a large number of Japanese companies have already internally adopted carbon pricing. And carbon credits are still trading around the 80 euro level, and it remains a government-sponsored trend, and we're starting to see prices steadying once more. I have a strong feeling that as we go forward in time, that it's going to be carbon emissions become more like a bond-like position in a portfolio, because they have the same level of government sponsorship, and the supply can be contracted in the event that you have economic weakness and less demand, and prices accelerate in line with economic growth. So you're given a hedge on the downside and upside, in which is akin to equity exposure, and that's almost like a bond-like characteristic. So certainly this is becoming a more interesting tradable asset class from an investment manager's perspective. Then I was reminded of carbon credits today because nickel prices have broken on the upside. And this is the completion of a 7-year base formation. Well, one of the reasons why nickel hasn't done better is because there was an oversupply of the metal because of Indonesian pig nickel being refined in China, but it's an incredibly energy intense process. So with the energy crackdown in China and the attempts to contain carbon emissions, then that supply of pig nickel has dried up. And we're seeing as well, even though Companies like Tesla are deploying lithium iron phosphate batteries that don't have either cobalt or nickel in them. They're still buying nickel because not every vehicle they produce will have those kinds of batteries. In fact, it's more likely that those batteries are going to be given to the Model 3 versions, and then the longer range vehicles will have nickel and cobalt batteries. And obviously, the longer the range, then the more nickel, because it's a more volatile reaction with lithium, and it produces greater energy density, but then it's also more combustible. So you don't get one without the other, unfortunately, until we get a significant iteration of the solid-state battery technology. And that is still a ways off in terms of mass production. But Toyota is probably going to be the automotive company that produces it first. And they showcased their solid-state battery at the Olympics, and the share continues to trend higher. It's the one automotive company, aside from Tesla, that's been able to grow production during the pandemic, and the share is breaking out of an extraordinarily long-term base formation. And we're also seeing that stocks like Glencore are breaking out of, or testing at least, the upper side of their long-term ranges, and that's a cobalt play. Of course, it's a play on lots of other metals too, but I think part of the reason that people are buying it is because of that cobalt exposure. And then lithium prices are up nearly six times over the course of the last 12 months. So that's certainly helping to support the outlook for lithium miners. And Allkem has popped on the upside recently, and it remains in this consistent staircase step sequence uptrend. So there's certainly opportunity in the markets out right now, and it's global in nature. And if the dollar continues to trend lower, well, then that's going to act like rocket fuel for emerging markets. And emerging markets have higher interest rates. And emerging market central banks have got more relevant experience about containing inflation. And they also have higher growth rates, so then net net you end up positive. But one of the reasons why people invest in emerging markets is because they get the capital market and currency market appreciation simultaneously. And that's potentially most relevant for places like Brazil. Brazil has raised interest rates from 2% to 9% in the space of a year, and the real is steadying from around the six level. And we can also see that back in 2011, the real was trading at about 1.5, and that means that it's lost 75% of its value in the space of a decade. So, if we are to see an appreciation even remotely similar to what we saw between 2003 and 2008, well, that was when the Brazilian stock market went absolutely haywire. And we had this phenomenal acceleration, and the market went up 1700% in the space of 6 years. So when we then think about what the opportunities are, there's the potential that emerging markets could play an incredible role in capital market appreciation and huge catch-up potential relative to Wall Street. And that, of course, is assuming that their currencies are in fact bottoming. But they certainly have high interest rates, and even the potential for inflation to moderate and growth to pick up and interest rates to start coming back down, that would help to support stocks and speculative activity, and it would reignite credit appetite. So certainly, emerging markets become very interesting if the dollar is in fact peaking. Now, of course, one day on the downside doesn't, or it's not like one swallow makes a summer. And one downward dynamic isn't going to make a trend. But certainly, when we think about the performance of emerging markets, places like Indonesia, which have been ranging for the last 4 years, is pausing now in the region of the all-time peaks. But when we then think about this in terms of just a dollar investor, well, then the market has been going sideways for a decade, and it's right in the region of the upper side of that range. There hasn't been a reason to be interested in emerging markets for a long time, and a good part of the reason for that is because China represents such a big weighting, so it's difficult to invest in emerging markets in a broad-based fund without getting China exposure. Of course, if China does step on the monetary and fiscal stimulus pedals, then China's markets will do well as well. So I think it is also important to continue to pay attention to the ex-China ETF. And I don't know whether I'm gonna, there we are, remember that ticker. But we've seen it outperforming for most of the last couple of years, and that is now firming from the lower side of this range that's formed over the last 12 months. So there is clear potential that in the event that the dollar weakens, there is a whole suite of emerging market and commodity related investments that are going to turn to significant outperformance, and they're cheap on a valuation basis, and a lot of the commodities are coming off of depressed levels, and that's particularly true of the precious metals. I think with that I'll leave you for today, and I'll just mention that I'm going to be away from my desk for the majority of tomorrow, and I'm going to a gala dinner tomorrow evening, so I'll post when I can, but the timing may be upset by other commitments. And I wish all the best to all of you.